Bring you greetings in the name of Jesus, the one who called us to come unto him and find rest. I just want to give my appreciation for the Sunday school lesson. It's interesting that we are kind of looking at two fairly rather important topics. When Glenn called me, or Michael called me, and a few weeks back, and wondered if I'd take this Sunday. And I reflect. 2-3 weeks ago, I had three sessions on family life, and 2 weeks from now, I have two sessions. And I guess I'm in the middle of that. I'll do it on family life. And I am just really blessed. I think we have such wonderful opportunities. We are called to pay attention to our family, and there's an area that I think a little bit like our treasures, we become pretty careless with sometimes, and family life become pretty careless with sometimes, and we have to pay attention. The setting that I have here, this peach I have along this morning, we spent a lot of time to get that where it is. And a lot of areas, this time of the year, in August, we have fruit set for next year. A little tiny peach sets on the tree right here in August. So in August, we make sure they have plenty of water. So we get a good fruit set. And then in the winter time, we're pruning, getting extra tree back and opening it up. Things that are not important, a little bit like life is. Some things we need to get rid of that aren't so important. And the reason we do that is to get good growth to what we have, and also sunlight in the color of fruit. I mean, it's very important to us. And then the color is essential. So what you see, but there's depth to that. And there's weeds growing around the trees that we cannot have. We take care of them, we cover, so the tree has freedom to grow. And of course there's bugs there, and the bugs are a real nuisance, and you have to pay a lot of attention to them and see what is besetting those peaches. And so we do that in a number of ways. We do some spraying, but limited spraying. We do more so is mating interruption. Every tree in the orchard has a little red tab on, oversized bread twister like. And that's on every tree in the orchard, we put one of those on. And that is a mating interruption. That tag puts off the same scent the female does, inviting the male to come and mate. And it puts off that much scent, it disorients the male and they never mate. It's called mating interruption. We control about 5 insects like that. And throughout the orchard, we have a triangle tab. And there we catch the bugs that are there, to find out which bugs are there. We pay attention, we don't know what's going on. So every week, Timothy gets a reading on that. We find out which critter it is. There's not that many critters there that we need to spray, they're okay. Or there's that many there, we need to pay attention to it. And we target spray and spray that. And then while we did all that and got a pretty good set, now we have too much fruit. So there's a lot of things to do. And we do that in our life. So much to do, and yet at the same time, we can't be doing all things. So we thin, take about 75% of the crop off, so that the remaining, on a twig this long, there's probably 25 little buds on there. And we really only want about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's all we want. And so we thin. So there's a lot of paying attention. So my point is that peach didn't just happen. And that's how our family life is. We do take that sometimes. It just kind of happens. See what happens next. And so this morning I want to help us to think about some of these things. Well, I had 3 sessions and 2 sessions. I normally have 5 sessions on family life. So what time's lunch? I'll be respectful. I was wondering if we do that way, we should have children's meeting. So children, I was wondering if you could come up here in the front bench and have a seat. I'll leave this group. All right. questions for you. Number one is, Daniel, back in the Bible, had three friends. What were their names? And there was a king, and what was his name? That is a little self-centered. I think we have our king that. Yeah, okay, are you going to share it with me? Nevertheless, King Nebuchadnezzar was quite a bird. He was really self-centered. Everybody, you got to worship me. Bow down. I'm so important. And he was such a bird. And he was so self-centered. And there's some time ago, I needed my blacktop, but something needed to be done. I tried to check the clear red and mark the baby. He said, well, you got to call it. They'll send somebody out. And so, this is fine. So, gentleman dives in there, gets out, shakes my hand. I'm the Tim Purple. I'm Earl Martin. Yeah, I know who you are. Your grandson Tim Martin's a friend of mine. And when I was a little boy, you came and gave a children's presentation, and you told us that self-centeredness is a terrible thing. And he remembered that so well. So I want to help you this morning to remember and realize how bad self-centered is. And a self-centered person, and the reason he remembers it is this is what we did. A self-centered person is a loser. And the loser is a self-centered person, just never wins. And if you don't learn that the self-centered is a problem, now it'll go probably all through life. And be terrible. It's a loser every time. So I'm going to help you, Tim remember. He said what he remembered, but I drill this. We don't have the biggest group, so we got to be very glad. A self-centered person is a loser. So you're going to repeat it after me. Self-centered person is a loser. Let's go real loud. That self-centered person is a
loser.
Right. One more time to practice. What self-centered person is a
loser.
Now, you stand up and stand up and face the group. Now, they may not have heard it because their hearing's not as good as one time. So you're going to tell them. The self-centered person is a
loser.
Yeah. One more time. The self-centered person is a
loser.
There. So you sit down. And a loser is the light to the world. And one thing we talked about is family. The family, the light to the world. A number of years ago, Joyce and some friends went out of the area and they stopped for lunch. And they were having lunch and they had little children home. And they were at B, and they paid a bill, and then, no, it's paid for. It's paid for. They were in an area where they didn't know where they were. Who would know them there? And they begged a little bit and said, well, that the gentleman over there, he's the one that. So they went over and talked to him, and he said, 9 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer to die, and I promised God that if he gives me life, I will do things to encourage other people and to walk with other people and not be a self-centered person. And he said, today when I saw you over there with all the children and they were eating, they were sitting, quiet, they cleaned up their food, I knew that I had to go. The point I'm making is people watching. And so we're the light to the world. And Matthew said that the light is to shine and be the light. I have a little something here for you to remember that you are the light of the world. Now, I think there might be some that aren't here this morning, but somehow we're going to have to get it to them. I'm pushing it back there to get the light. This little light of mine, Brian, can we do that?
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine.
remember that when you're older, always having it around the house. Remember that if you're self-centered, yeah. Okay, you can go back.
You want your plans back?
No, you keep that. Somewhere along the line, find out a few people that children that might not be here this morning, and you reach in that bag and get a light for them. I'd like to look at the 3 points this morning. First of all, was that the self-centered person is a loser. And we learned that well, and know that that's not going to get us anywhere, get us in a lot of trouble, and is always a loser. So the second area that I want to look at is that we want our children to be a light that we reflect onto to others. The other is having right resources to do what we can. We're living in a time when things are just really bad and trouble on every hand. And what do? We kind of wring our hands and, oh, I just don't know what to do. And well, I like the little story that I think I repeated here, recited here before. But there's the, on your $10 bill, there's a picture of Al Hamilton. And I think we did this here before already. Al Hamilton was shot by who? In 1804, you don't remember that, but you remember your history class? 1804, Al Hamilton shot by?
Aaron Burr.
Aaron Burr. Here's your $10 bill. Aaron Burr was a wicked man, running for governor for New York, and was running, saw all his ills. Well, Al Hamilton decided that's not a good thing. And Al Hamilton ran for governor as well, and Al Hamilton got him. And after he won the race and governor for governor, Aaron Burr challenged him to a shootout in the West to match to whose wins. They'd actually do a shootout. In the East, they were more cultured, and so they do the ritual and then just shoot up in the air. But Aaron Burr shot and killed Al Hamilton. Al Hamilton was a very noted man, and his house that he came out of that morning was preserved for many, many years until here in 2000. They wanted to move, that move house had to move because it was in a way of development. Had to move down 1.5 blocks. But they couldn't decide how to move it. They didn't know how to move it. How to get through. There was a high skyscraper on the one side, a 42-foot historic church on the other side, and they couldn't get through. And so somewhere along the line, they learned about the Wolf Movers in Salonga, Pennsylvania. And so they called them up. And they, at this point, are Mark Buckingham is a River Brethren. He has a company now. And they were wringing their hand. What do they do? We can move this for you. We can get this done. And so they did that. And what they did, I talked to Mark himself, and he said they had 15 ton of chain and chain binders, 15 tractor trailer loads of cribbing, and they took this house, 50 ton of steel, rolled that 300 ton of down to that point. They raised it 42 feet, 43 feet, and rolled it through and back down. And they is in the song of over $10 million. Seventh generation of Al Hamilton was there that day. They rolled it through. I didn't call early enough to May 27th, 2008. There's a van load went up to behold the occasion. And I think Levi's brother was one of them. And so they got it done. My point I'm making is we're living in a time where how can you raise a good family in such an environment? You just can't. Well, I'm here to assure you this morning that you can because they have the right resources. That house got moved there because of the right resources. And we have those right resources. I have a fair amount of scripture that I may just kind of forfeit in reading, but so we have the right resources. And the third point that I wanted, we were self-centered person, the loser. The second one is that we have the right resources, we can do it. And third is little things matter. In the orchard, we have bees that are very important to us. And we have a little glass showcase where the bees are. They moved out right now. But you sit there and you watch the bee, and the bee comes back with a little bit of pollen in its tentacle, whatever. It's much smaller than the tip of a pen, but you can see the color of the flower that it was with, and it's crawling up there and unloads its load of nectar. So that's how the honey gets built. And we think that little things really matter, is my point. In family life, little things really matter. Financial things, little things really matter. And so we need to pay attention to that. We harvested, first of all, a couple months ago, about 600 pounds of honey. Then we did a couple months or so later, 800 pounds of honey. Last week they were there and harvested 1,300 pounds of honey. So over 2,600 pounds of honey from just doing that little tiny thing. And Lamar told me that he probably will harvest another time yet before winter and leave some there for them for winter. Just that little bit of nectar, and it accumulates. Benjamin said he still needs more than that honey, so he's hoping to harvest the fourth time this year. But the point I'm making is that little things really matter. I have a little Glenn come back, dairy farmer. And I don't know if any of the probably dairy farmers here. But the dairy farmer, he knows the cows, he knows each name, he knows the sire, he knows the dam, he knows the dam's sire, and he goes on back and knows they were classified 93D. He has all that in hot. So one day, somebody says, so how old is your boy? Mom, how old is he? And he doesn't know. He knows all that, but he doesn't know that. And I challenge you to be. Now, I know we don't have a lot of age group there, as young age group, but it's coming. The children's birthdays, I don't remember how old they are. That's all forever changing. So you remember the year and the date. And I can recite all the boys' birthdays and dates, and I won't bother with that. The next generation comes along, 23 of them. So I put them in a date book. And just a point that I'm making is little things really matter. Now, the oldest ones are married and have children already, so they don't really care. But the other grandchildren, grandpa, let's see, and they have their birth date written in here, the year they were born. And that's really important to them. And when their birthday comes, they want to double check that it's officially there. And every now and then, when? And so they need a page in here and find out that this particular birth date. But yeah, their name is. And I'm making a point of little things. It's pretty exciting for them to see that grandpa watches their birth date and sees what their dates are. And so there's so many little things that we have and that we should pay attention to. Somebody want to hand, or two of you, maybe hand these papers out. Little things really matter. The four-year-old daughter of a busy father had a favorite story, The Three Little Pigs, and she demanded her dad reads it her every night after night after night. Finally, the dad, pleased with himself, recorded the story. When the child again asked for the story, he simply switched on the playback. This worked for a couple of nights, but then one evening, the little girl pushed the storybook in front of her father. "Nah, honey," he said, "you know how to turn on the playback recording yourself." "Yes," she said, "but I can't sit on its lap." And little things are so important, essential for us to, whether we take and spend a little time with them. Were there enough? Just take a look at this. I'd like to think about this for a little bit. Deuteronomy, you don't need to turn to it. I'll read Deuteronomy 4, 9. Only take heed to thyself, and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, and lest they have depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But teach them to your sons and your sons' sons, especially the day that thou stoodest before the Lord thy God in Horeb, when the Lord said unto me, gather me the people together, and I will make them hear my word, that they may learn to fear me all the days of that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children. Psalm 78 is one that it talks about teaching their children's children, and there's a lot of reference to that. I won't necessarily turn to that, but the idea of being a family life, and family life is to our shame, we become so careless with it and aren't paying attention, and we're not forgetting what we're trying to have. By the way, this speech, we did a lot of good things, but it's not quite perfect. That's some spots on. And that's if you think, well, it's kind of fail. You're not going to be perfect, but you at least have fruit that's there to bear and fruit that's on to eternity. When we talked about these two areas this morning, huh? Well, they're pretty essential, and we need to pay attention. Fathers, planning. Our children are messengers we send into a time and era that we will not see or go. And you reflect about that. The children are like an arrow in our quiver. They go to a place and accomplish what we never will. But it was our duty to go ahead and select. That quiver story that's there in Psalms 127 is not when they went to the gun shop and found arrows. That's when they whittled their quiver. Arrows and made them just right. And so this is much more of this thing. I have three steps there to a lasting relationship with our children. Love, listen, and lead. God so loved the world that he gave his only God's son. And that's the whole call for our lives is to love. Corinthians gives us there that we what we accept from God, we have to give to others. We have that for our children. Just recently, a fact of happening of a father being so irate and irresponsible, and the children afraid of them. And how can you think that way? How can you be that way? Somebody wasn't paying attention. Somebody didn't care. And so God loved us, so we have that to love, and listen and lead. We love because we are to be loved. And remember that your children are very normal and they like to be loved. They're just like you. You like to be loved. And then to listen, God calls us to pray. He calls us to prayer. And we need to, he wants to hear from us. So we listen to our children, what they had to say. When they come home from school and have a story they want to tell, I'm busy making supper. I can't. Later on, you can. Wham! Just a little thing that they had, and you rejected it. And so pay attention. When it's not convenient, they will have something to talk about. I'm not as old as you think I am. I remember the boys coming home, youth nights, and they came home at unusual hours, 10, 11, 12. And they wasn't unusual. They knew we were light sleepers, so they could come over to our room. And the rocking chair that was in the corner for Joyce to rock the babies in our bedroom was only used for the boys. They came home and they had something that happened, something that took place. And my wrong response would have been, talk about it in the morning. You know, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And so you can't do that. You do it when they are ready. And those times, those nights, I remember some of those stories yet that were told that night. Just a little thing. One nice little bit of rest. But it accumulated a lot of honey. I had a friend, he had all girls, so I had the solution for him because we didn't have any girls. So he had this problem that his girls, you know, he listens, but they don't talk. They just don't talk. So I give them some counsel. Just pay attention. Listen to them when they talk. So he got back a few weeks later. He said, "That don't work. I tried it." I set him down here and says, "Now, what did you want to talk about?" And then they didn't have anything to say. No, that's not what I had in mind. It doesn't work that way. It's when the time is that they want to talk. And that's true for partners too, by the way. And then if you love them and listen to what they have to say, you know, they're not going to wish for a Mountain Dew for breakfast. That doesn't know what I'm talking about. But the little story, then you can lead them. And that's what God is. God loves us with all his heart, that he gave his son. And he listens. He asks us for prayer. And when he has those two things in prayer, and then he leads us with the word. And the word is never changing. And so that's how we need to do it in our life. We need to love. There's a couple of Dutch ones here. We do it hin as fetisht. We lead, you know, boy, we got to do this just right. And then, oh yeah, I hear what you're saying. And that's right, I got to love these youngsters. I got to love them. But it's backwards. We do the love first, listen, and lead. Make sense? Then going on to seven practical applications, building a Christian home is edify. And I can't make enough of this, edifying. You're normal, your children are normal, and they need to be encouraged and edified. And it means so much. It'll take you. Ephesians says, edify, that minister grace to the hearer. And numerous places it refers to edifying. And show appreciation, number two there. We want to show appreciation. You do a job, Dan, the truck turns out well. And the guy comes and picks it up and says, thank you, and leaves. He should rave a little bit about that, how nice the job is, and rave a little bit. And there's enough of human in you to go ahead and do the next job just as good or better. And that's how our children are. But we forget that sometimes. And be an example worthy to be followed. I remember so well things that my father did. He didn't tell me, now this is how you do it, but just did. When back in the spring old days, tramps would come to the door. We would be ordered. We knew what to do. We'd go up in the barn, especially if it was late afternoon. We'd go up in the barn and make a bed for him in the straw bed. Mom would make an egg sandwich and milk and cookies. And we'd take him out to our tramp friends. Those were homeless people back in those days. That's who tramps were. And they were always so kind to them. And I always had appreciation for less fortunate. Mom would sing the tramp song. The tramp song was sitting around doing peas or doing corn. Mom was a singer, and she would sing this song, sing the California song, the earthquake way out in California, Santa Barbara, in the 1900s. And she'd sing these songs, and one of them was a tramp song. And it went something like this, you know. May I stay in your barn tonight, mister, for it's cold lying out on the ground. The cold north winds are blowing. And you can just feel the cold. It wasn't hard to go up and make a bed. And I believe that's one thing I have in me, less fortunate, to do all you can. And Glenn has touched on that. Doing, listening out. My neighbor, Lady Frances, she was kind of a card, we thought. But we had a small farm and we irrigated. And so we irrigated at night. And so one day, Dad went down, and I still see that evening, just as this happened, to put fuel on the tractor just before evening so the tractor run night. And Frances came marching down across and Dad, and in his face, and she was instructing him that she dare not irrigate at night. And Paul and I were watching there, and said, we wish she'd die from starvation. And Dad, and mind you, from that point on, we didn't irrigate at night. Never, Dad never said, well, Francis made a real fuss, so I guess we won't irrigate. He just didn't irrigate at night. Francis was a good neighbor. And things like that are little things, but people pay attention, and your children, first of all. One night, fellow from town stopped in, And he was all riled up, and he said somebody painted some stuff in the churchyard up in the, and he was going on and on. And I still can see, but I was out saying thank you, more just saying thank you. Went in and got a quart of paint and left, came back. I said, never heard a thing about it, never. The poor guy that was wanting to make a fuss really blew it. But I learned from that, you don't make a scene of yourself in front of your children. I can just imagine that dad would have made a, could have made a real scene of himself. And then, and it's just little things. We need to move along here. Example worthy to be followed. Hate sin. Speak out about the wrong. And it's going to be wrong. It was wrong. It always will be wrong. One that comes up in our faces is moral purity. And divorce and remarriage. It just it doesn't change. And dad holds that. Then that a spiritual leader. Lead in family devotions. Be a leader. Be a spiritual leader. When the church doors are open, you're there. It's just so important. There's little things. Number six there is be clear and be consistent. That's how it goes over to discipline, and I'd like to touch on that just a little bit. How early do you be disciplined and be clear and be consistent? This being consistent is being a loving person. I believe a dad with expecting mother would read out loud, and there's people that are smarter than I say that that has its effect on the unborn child. And so the should be reading. And the way where you learn to sit in church is at home having devotions and read outs aloud when this holding your infant, reading out loud. And it communicates. It's a little thing. But understand that it's very consistent, the relationship builder. Clear and consistent, I did for a number of years, many years, did tours on the orchard for all kinds of the thousands of children we go through in the summer, a couple thousand. And I'm not doing that anymore. I'm baking now. Joyce and I bake. So the children in different levels, some groups would come there and the teacher would say something and I'll listen. Next group would be chaos. Groups that came out of Philadelphia where I told Josiah one time, he said, you can't narrate. They're just wild. And the teachers are sitting in the back corner on their phone, and you can't relate. And so you have to be able to communicate. And you're gonna, now at the level where I have grandchildren, but great grandchildren, and realize how smart they are. And I think it's because they're my great grandchildren. That's why they know so much. And yet the other hand. The other hand, people say, well, you know, they just don't understand. You know, they just don't understand. And then the other hand, we say, boy, they're so intelligent. And like I say, we take the credits for it. It's not because my grandchildren are so intelligent. That's just how children are. They know so much. And I am amazed to see a less than a year old how much they know and they understand. And this is the first discipline. When a child is less than a year old, you can discipline them. You can take them. When they fuss, everything's okay. They're not hungry. It's not cold. The diaper pin, you know, that's what you see. Diaper pins are not sticking, and everything's okay. And they're, and you can go ahead and hold that infant tight, not snug, not squeeze, snug, and hold them, and they will give up. And you can tell when it happens. And many testimonies coming back to me saying that that's how it works. The next is when they're old enough, stand up, and they get up here, and they want to get this. And you want that? Don't want that to happen. So you go ahead and put everything up high, like it's high water coming. It's not necessary. That little child, and it will learn within a day's time. The little child that comes up there and he reaches for that, and you say no, snap their finger, and they'll immediately double check. And you stay consistent, and you go again, no. Mom, what you want to do is you go, No, mommy. What the, you know mommy doesn't want you to do that. You stop that. And phew, they had no idea what you meant. But this command, they know immediately what you get. And then later on in the day, it's a double check. But you're going to stay consistent, remember? And you're going to stay clear that you don't want that to happen. And it works. Oh, my child is so self-centered and so self-willed. It just doesn't work. Well, let me tell you, they're not going to put at your thorn bush outside your porch. They're not going to touch the hot stove after you get. They're going to respect that because that's clear and consistent. And I had some of that testimony. One later, a child a little bit older, but she said within the day we de-screamed her. She'd just always scream, and she had wrote me a note that she's just driving me crazy. I can't take it. And so we went through this clear and consistent thing. And so she sent me an email before I got home from the meetings and said, our daughter just screamed. She doesn't scream anymore. And she was clear. She was a little older. She was eligible for paddling. When you scream, but she was very clear, look, this is how it works. That screaming just may not happen anymore. And we do it on the run on past. Now stop your screaming and go about it. And we didn't really mean it. Nor do they think we mean it. But look, when you scream, you're going to get paddled. You understand that? No. But immediately, you go to screaming. And there's a connection from here to here that works. Good, solid connection. And you can do a little learning within a day at a time. But what we do is frustrate ourselves, and then we do things that we should never do. Handle them unreal, rough, hard handling, and then get in trouble. It's 11 o'clock.
My lasagna's not ready yet.
You heard that. The lasagna's not ready, so. Be clear and consistent. On the a little older than paddling, I have to just take in the whole area of paddling. This is my overhead. That you never forget. You've got to be clear and consistent. The reason it doesn't work is you're not consistent. The next day you're baking cookies, and so you just set things up and don't do it. You've got to lay your cookies to the side, your chocolate chip cookies will wait, and then you can stay clear and consistent. And they will learn, it will be a no, and they respond, or either afterwards. Because they look, they know something. It's not quite right, and they look at you. Great-grandchildren are a year and just a little less and a little more, and they know so much. It must be one of my great-grandchildren. It's not that they're intelligent. And the world around us says, well, they're just, you know, they just don't understand. The pathetic thing to do. Terrible twos. Don't ever repeat that or recite that at your home. The terrible twos. It's not true. They don't know any different. The only thing they know is what you taught them. Let's go on to the paddling for just a little bit. There's a right thing to do, wrong thing to do, paddling. I don't think I was much of an angel, but I only really remember one paddling. And I believe it's because something happened when I was younger and got the picture of how this works or what, but I don't remember. But if you say the paddle, you're spoiling the child. And I have a lot of references on that, and you can find it as well. But if you don't take care of correcting and drive the ill out of their heart, it's going to be your suffering and your downfall. I can't make this strong enough. There's a little bit of a writing that in one of Harold Martin's pamphlets. Some years ago, one mother told her pastor this story, and all the while she seemed amused about the whole thing. She said, "Preacher, I had a 6-year-old son, and you know, a funny thing happened the other day. He was out and playing in the yard, and I had his lunch ready, and I had it nice and warm, and then I went out and called him and told him to come in and eat his lunch. But," she said, "he never paid attention to me. I had to heat the lunch all over again and warm the second time, and I called him again. I had to warm the lunch 3 times before he came in to eat. The preacher said, 'Lady, it doesn't take long to diagnose your case. You warmed the wrong thing. If you had warmed the right thing at the right place, it wouldn't take long for your boy and his lunch to get together.'" And so How true that is, and how humorous that can sound, but it's so true. You ruin a child by not calling command. Another thing, just a few highlights on paddling. Never paddle if they don't know what it's for. If you're not sure what happened or what took place, forfeit that paddling. Because when that child gets paddled for something they didn't do, when they're probably 50 years old, they will still remember. They'll remember. And so don't ever paddle, because you don't know. And don't paddle with assuming. A little story with that, but leave that lay. The other is never paddle in public. Never in public. It's true that Pennsylvania is legal paddling, but at the same time, the people converted over and transferred. There was a church in the Keystone district that a young, I don't know if his mother or dad, took him outside paddling, and the neighbor reported it, and the police showed up. And they explained what was actually happening, that the paddling, and the policeman actually took it, and they explained the paddling session, and he accepted and left. Everything was okay. But never paddle when you're mad or angry. This is never a right time to do it. Manage this person first. Let's go on to number 7, to develop a giver and not a taker. Self-centered person will always be a taker. And you know, the whole family life is such a beautiful picture that we can show to the world around us. The world around us believes that young people, and this is a testimony for young people, I'll tell you, young people are terrible these days. They're just so irresponsible, and the list goes on. It's just terrible. And my challenge to you, because I saw so much of it, is that you take and be who you ought to be as a Christian, and they have to take that back, that the young people are terrible. They're not responsible, and the list goes on. You have an interview with your employer, and be as a young person, who you ought to be, and talk how you ought to be. Sit up straight, dress right, dress attractive, and pay attention to what they say, and move with dignity. You know, move with a slouch and favor. And that a businessman will have to go home that night and tell his partner that this is something different. I can't believe it. And he has to explain that this young person moved with dignity and character and spoke with dignity and respect. And it's just unbelievable. And that's a testimony of what God has instilled in you by your parents, and so valuable. Father, with the paddling, it should be, and teaching should be gentle beneath his firmness, and mother should be firm beneath her gentleness. On the other hand, when I'm talking this tight, never accept disrespect. Children, disrespect mother. Dad, it's your fault. It lays totally at your doorstep. You never allow them. Or the other thing is, a lot of materials will tell you, but don't even, I'm a stickler on this too, is don't let them roll their eyes, you know, do this. And that's disrespect. Don't paddle for mistakes. Paddle for open, raw disrespect and open, raw disobedience, and make it speak altogether clear. When they disobey, you do the correction. Be clear that that can't happen. I don't paddle my grandchildren, but I do sit them down and say, look, when grandpa says something, that's what it means. You can't. You dare never do that to grandpa. And you can get tears, the feeling. And you can say, well, then as a parent, I'm going to do that way too. There's some place for that. But in general, the Bible has more to say. The world being a taker, that's all. We live in that taker world all the time. And we need to learn and teach our children to be givers and not be self-centered. Because that self-centered person is a loser. Okay? I Think the lasagna soon going to be ready. An old man going along the highway came to an evening cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The solemn stream had he no fear for him, but he turned when safe on the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow pilgrim near, you are wasting your time with building here. You never again will pass this way. Your journey will end with the closing of the day. You have crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at evening tide? And the builder lifted his old gray head. Good friend, in the way that I have come, he said, there follows after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. The stream that was, but it's been but naught to me, to the fair-haired youth might the pitfall be. He too must cross in twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building the bridge for him. Those are those little things. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for family life. It's been such a blessing in many, many ways. And just guide our ways as we teach from here. Thank you for all my friends here at Word of Life and the blessing they've been to my life. And Joyce and I have so enjoyed. And thank you for giving instructions for what you want for us to do. We just commit it all to you. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. I'll kind of let my mess lay here.